children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Mary Lee Allen, who is Director of Child Welfare and Mental Health at the Children's Defence Fund. For more than two decades, Mary Lee Allen has played a leadership role in the development, passage and implementation of major child welfare and children's mental health reforms. The Children's Defence Fund recently released their report, The State of America's Children, 2011. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mary Lee Allen.
Thank you.
And clearly this idea that we have these appalling statistics relating to the poverty of children and the deprivation of children in the wealthiest country on the planet is shameful, but it seems particularly so in the context of what's happening with our national politics, where we have a successful movement in this country that's convinced the majority of the American people that we have to accept some austerity and cut back on traditional programs for the elderly, like Social Security and Medicaid. And the idea that we would be throwing our elderly into poverty when our children are already in poverty seems so counterintuitive. So give me a sense of what you feel that the response has been to this shocking report that you put out.
The Children's Defense Fund, State of America's Children 2011, really paints a devastating portrait, as you've mentioned, of children's needs across the country. And I think what is particularly significant about it is the fact that with rampant unemployment, housing foreclosures, homelessness and hunger, and then massive looming federal and state budget cuts, children's well-being is in great jeopardy. So we look at this whole range of data that looks from birth through children moving into adulthood, and at each of these points, we should be moving forward and advancing children's well-being, but instead, pressures, particularly at the federal level, but also in states, are moving us backwards in terms of children's needs. And therefore, we've got to change that national politic that you described. We've got to talk about people investing in children now so that as our workforce of the future, they'll be able to care for an aging generation. I think it's important, though, to keep in mind that the polling, some of the recent polling that's been done, really shows that the general public believes in the importance of investing in children. They do not want to see cuts in Medicaid, in education programs, in Head Start and others. They want to see us looking at the tax side of our agenda as well as the spending side of our agenda. I think what's so important when people look at this is they talk about deficits and they forget that deficits aren't only about spending. Deficits are about the gap between spending and revenues. And therefore, when we talk about investing in children, we've got to look at being able to continue to increase investments in Head Start and early childhood. At the same time, we cut back in tax breaks and closing loopholes for some of our richest Americans and corporations. And that's what we hope the State of America's Children can help to do, to say if we're serious about our future and our economic stability in the future, there are a number of areas where we need to invest.
But just to return to the idea that there's serious efforts afoot, some of which the President Obama apparently agreed to cut back on Social Security, the children today of the elderly would be bankrupt if they had to pay their parents' health care and nursing care in their old age, which is what Social Security does. And if you took it away, then the burden would be on the younger generation who simply don't have the means in any case. But I wanted to get a sense, just to tie this into our discussion here about the state of children in America, don't a lot of grandparents take care of kids?
Absolutely. In this country today, there are over 5 million grandchildren who are being raised in grandparent-headed households, and they're close to 1 million children who are being raised by grandparents without their own parents in the home. So, and I think it's particularly important to point out that the Social Security program provides critically important support for all children. 6.5 million children benefit from Social Security. But it also provides extra support to those children who are being raised specifically by their grandparents. So people forget that Social Security is a children's program as well as a program for seniors.
I'm speaking with Mary Lee Allen, who is Director of Child Welfare and Health at the Children's Defense Fund, and she is a co-author of the new report put out by the Children's Defense Fund, The State of America's Children 2011. Let's just go through some of the findings. As deeply troubling as they are, I think they're very important for the public to recognize that these are real statistics affecting real people and, most of all, affecting young and innocent and helpless children. The number of children living in poverty has increased by 4 million since 2000, and the number of children who fell into poverty between 2008 and 2009 was the largest single-year increase ever recorded. Where do we stand now?
I think certainly when you look at the 2009 data, and that is the most recent data we have, there will be updated statistics coming out in mid-September from the Census Bureau. But I think when you look at the fact that the child poverty increased just between 2008 and 2009 by 10%, which was the largest single-year increase since data was first collected. So I think we're all very concerned about what we're going to see a month from now when the 2010 data come forward. We have right now where every 32 seconds in our country, another child is born poor. And when you look at children of color, more than 1 in 3 Black and 1 in 3 Hispanic children are poor. So that gives you a sense of the special challenges. I think there's another very important point here about poverty. Almost half of all poor children live in extreme poverty, and that's at incomes of less than half of the poverty level. And to translate that, that's $30.10 a day for a family of four. So just imagine from your own personal situation that if you had all you had to raise four children for a family of four on was $30.10 a day, the challenges you'd be facing.
Another statistic, the number of homeless children in public schools increased 41% between 2006-2007 and 2008-2009 school years.
And certainly the number of homeless children, I think, is a very significant impact here as families are faced with foreclosures and end up on the street with their children. I think any of us could put ourselves in that situation and think of where would we go, where would we reach out, how would we get help. But that increase in the number of homeless children in schools, and that's a conservative measure because that's only the homeless children who are actually getting to school. And when you think about the number who aren't in one place long enough that they even get enrolled in school, that number is even higher.
Another statistic. In 2009, an average of 15.6 million children received food stamps monthly, a 65% increase over 10 years.
And certainly the number of children on food stamps has been increasing. There was just data released recently from this May that showed the significant increase, 45.7 million individuals living on food stamps. That's the highest number ever recorded. And I think what's particularly significant there is that for 37 straight months, that number has continued to increase. And that is the total number of individuals in America on food stamps. But roughly 3/4 of those are in families with children. So it gives you a sense of what that's increased. It's increased for the last 3 years steadily each month as we move forward.
And again, I'm speaking with Mary Lee Allen, who is the Director of Child Welfare and Health at the Children's Defense Fund. We're talking about their recent report, The State of America's Children 2011. Now, Mary Lee, obviously, if you have hungry and homeless children, they are not going to do well at school, or shall we say they're deeply disadvantaged. Another statistic, a majority of children in all racial groups and 79% or more of Black and Hispanic children in public schools cannot read or do math at grade level in the 4th, 8th, and 12th grades.
Certainly when you look at these data, and I think they're really among the most striking, when you consider that children cannot read, children in public schools cannot read or do math at grade level, it's really a death sentence in this global economy where the ability to achieve is so significantly important. The fact that you cannot read and cannot compute by the time you graduate from high school really makes the prospects of future employment especially dim as we move forward.
And another statistic, the annual cost of center-based childcare for a four-year-old is more than the annual in-state tuition at a public four-year college in 33 states and the District of Columbia.
Certainly, the costs of childcare are challenges that families face across the spectrum of incomes, but particularly for families who lose their job but yet still have another parent working, the ability to get together the resources necessary to continue your child in childcare is so critically important. And I think we all know, too, the emotional impact on children that these times have, because not only do they sense the lack of stability in the home as parents are struggling with not having health care and not having employment, but they also then experience that instability as they have to be pulled from one childcare provider to another.
So is there any talk at the federal level for addressing this crisis in childcare? Because as we know, there's a lot of unemployment, but people who have employment for the longest time now, women have been working, they've had to work. So you have this situation where both parents are working and sometimes working several jobs.
And balancing the opportunity for childcare. I know certainly the Children's Defense Fund has continued to push forward in terms of trying to see significant increases in availability of dollars, not only for childcare, but for quality childcare. And in some instances, this may be family childcare, family daycare, but in more instances, it's trying to get children in quality center-based care that's so extremely significant. And we equate quality early childhood experiences with the issue of being ready for school and being able to start school ready to learn. And it moves us right into the whole area of education. I don't know that you know, but the fact that there are only 10 states that currently require, and these are that currently require by law, that all children get kindergarten. But yet, if you don't provide kindergarten to a child, they sort of start school with a half a step missing. They may go to kindergarten half day, and if they happen to have the money, they can go full day. So as CDF looks at the whole transition between early childhood and education, that kindergarten piece is particularly important as well.
But Mary Lee Allen, we've been largely addressing these terrible statistics in terms of what the federal government is not addressing or inadequately addressing. But it seems that already at the state level, this is where much of the damage is being done, because of the 47 states with newly enacted budgets, 38 or more of these states are making deep cuts in K-12 education, higher education, healthcare, and all of these are affecting the numbers of children who are both homeless and enrolled in public schools.
That's right. I think it's so important that we think of and we help educate our policymakers at the federal level, but also in states, to recognize that what we're talking about is a cascading disaster for these children, that the federal budget cuts that are being talked about will come on top of cuts that have already occurred, as you mentioned, at the state level and at the local level. When you look at programs that we know work, the Medicaid program and Children's Health Insurance Program for low-income children, the food stamp program, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, are critically important, and they're threatened with cuts that will then affect the state's ability to continue to move forward as well. And I think when you add these budget cuts to the stresses on families that have already occurred while family stability begins to deteriorate and lost jobs and reduced unemployment, you really beginning to get that sense that these things all topple one on top of another and frequently hit some of the very same families, the most vulnerable children and families who are left at risk as these services are cut back. For example, states have cut almost 600,000 jobs since 2008. So when you look at the ability of families to get the help they need in the states, if we lose federal dollars, that safety net is not there. That safety net has already become porous and been torn as we look ahead.
But surely, Mary Lee Allen, if we have millions of children in this country growing up under these terrible conditions where they're homeless and hungry and the numbers are growing, you would think that this is just the tip of the iceberg of what the cost that society pays. For a small investment in preventing this deprivation of young children, you prevent what happens later, I think, and it's probably, I imagine I'm correct in suggesting that kids that grow up under those terrible disadvantages who don't get a good education may well end up later in our jails, costing us more. Is that the pathology that you've noticed?
Well, and what the Children's Defense Fund describes that as the cradle-to-prison pipeline crisis facing children in our country. And this crisis really is at the intersection of poverty and race, because you have children who start out born at low birth weight. They don't get the quality early childhood experience that they need. They enter school, but they're not ready. So they are one of the 40% of children who drop out of school. They then become victim of abuse and neglect, may go into foster care, and move from there to the juvenile justice system, and too frequently from there to the adult criminal justice system. And at each stage, the cost of their care gets higher as we move forward. So certainly the need to invest early so that we can substitute that cradle-to-prison pipeline with a pathway to college and to productive employment and success for all children is the goal that we're working to achieve.
Well, Mary Lee Allen, you would think that there've got to be some billionaires out there who aren't paying their fair share of taxes that must realize that just to forego another home somewhere or another yacht would mean a better chance for millions of young kids in this country. And I guess hopefully there's some way that we can shame this society into doing the right thing.
Certainly, as we look forward, we have to protect children in low-income families from cuts. We have to invest in early childhood education, health, and mental health programs that we know will not only strengthen children, but the nation's economic future. But it's absolutely essential that we end tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires and close those tax loopholes for corporations as we move forward, because it's all about choices. The problems that we've described are not acts of God. They're choices that we've made as a public, as politicians, and we've got to change our choices and invest in children as we move ahead.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Mary Lee Allen.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Mary Lee Allen, who is Director of Child Welfare and Mental Health at the Children's Defense Fund. The Children's Defense Fund recently released their report, The State of America's Children, 2011. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I would like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter and production intern Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting, and you can contact me at ianmasters.com. I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.